Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. Don't blame us. Since the part-time weekly show, we were recovering from our big Flanders trip, but no recovery for...
Wade.
What?
Is that Will's fault?
Yeah,
the guy that forced
fault.
Us through the weekly show.
He cost us... He cost everybody four pods. We would have done Catalunya. Nah, ain't nothing in the world convincing me to do a Moran van den Berg reduced sprint recap in Catalunya. No offense to the man, but anyway, this is E3 Saxo Classic Harold Becker Press, Bink Bank, and it's the mini Tour of Flanders, or so they call it. There's a few differences in the route. They reverse the Paterberg and the Quarmont. Notably, it's shorter. Starts in Harold Becker and finishes there. They do a loop out to the east near Oudenaarde and Ronse. But it's, 208 kilometers, so about an hour shorter than the real Tour of Flanders. And the first climbing sections start 90 k's in with La Hoop, then Canarieberg, which is quite long, Nochteberg, and then the race kind of has typically opened every year on the Tienberg with 80 k's to go, which is quite far. And then there's just climbs back to back to back. They're all quite long as well. They're not punchy climbs like the Paterberg, for example. A lot of them, that's actually one of the shorter ones. A lot of these are about a K or even... even longer, like the Nochteberg is 1,200 meters. So the difference is then, with about 45 k's to go, they do the Paterberg first and then the Quarmont. And they do that in reverse order in the Tour of Flanders before doing the Karmelbachstraat. The last climb to Tiefenberg, where they might give away some bathroom furniture. Was it Karmelbachstraat? Whatever it is.
Karmelbachstraat.
Close enough. And then it's about 22 k's from the finish with no cobble. So there's not as many cobbled climbs. I would say it's a lot of fast asphalt climbs, but the climbs are really close together, Benji. Like the only real flat section is after the Tienberg and before the Kapellberg.
Exactly. And we have to say that the climbs with the cobble segments are usually the ones that do make the difference. The other ones are used to try and attack on it as well, but it's not as selective, you know? Even the smallest cobble segments, the cobble climbs, like the Stationsstraat, for example, the Stationsberg, the Steenbeekdries, whatever you call it, there's like 70 names for it. That's the one where last year we had Van der Poel go, Wout van Aert get on the wheel, then Pogacar was on a gap and had to close it after that climb. Well, so it's always the cobble ones that really are the selective ones on this route. So I was looking forward to this, and my alarm was set basically at the, I'd say at the top of the Knochteberg to start properly watching, and that's where the coverage kicks in this race. But before that, we do have a large breakaway in this race, and I feel like the breakaway was formed in multiple waves, I would say. And there was like an initial breakaway with the likes of the Beist and so forth, 10 riders if I recall correctly, Boss and Hagen in there, but that group gets caught. In the meanwhile, while all this is happening, we hear the likes of Peristrand Hagenes, Van Baarle, and about eight others hit the floor. So we have a crash of like 10 riders, and it has its consequences, because for Visma, Peristrand Hagenes abandons, which means they go towards a time bet with one rider less. Van Baarle being hit means that there's something potentially there as well. And then going further in the race, we hear a mechanical of Wellens, but then finally after like 70 kilometers of racing, we have a breakaway. A group of three riders then gets joined by a group of seven riders. Emil Herzog, the junior world champion of Wollongong against Morgado, head. Lebere, we've seen this guy in the break a few times for Arkea, I think last year as well, in the early classics. Sander de Pestel was here for the Cavalier Jezer. Good ride by him today. Cavagna Milesi, both in the breakaway. Niklas Merkel, Oliveira, Steimle, Abrahamsen, and Vermote. And this is a solid breakaway. This is 10 ride, by the way, Jelle Vermote, not Julien Vermote, not the new Visma rider. 3 minutes 25 to the peloton at the first hill of the hill zone. So on La Hoop with about 120 kilometers to go. And I never really feared for this breakaway, because you go into this race with a different view than Omloop, right? In Omloop, it was Affini is going to have to do all the work. And here it is, Alpecin, Visma, Little Trek, and maybe even some other teams feel like they might be willing to pace the peloton. You said Ineos, so...
I only saw that on PCS Live Stats. Maybe they didn't. I mean, it could have been... That was before coverage. But yeah, for sure, it's not just like a one-man job for Affini. pacing, and especially when he gets to the hills, he can't pace those hills as quick as that breakaway either. So it's a strong break, guys. It's an above average strong break when you consider how good Abrahamsson, Steimler, Oliveira have been recently, yep. Even DePestel. I think it's a good break, but because it formed so late, it never got time to get 7-8 minutes. And that's the downside. And so the strongest guys made it because it took so long for the break to form, but then they never had that margin before they got to the hill zone. But I have an interesting proposition for the listeners, Benji. I'm putting the power back in their hands. I completed the joint cycling classics training plan that I set for Flanders last week. Successful, got over all the climbs, no worries. You'll see that on the video next week. I will do the training plan on join that gets the most, not upvotes, that's the most commented on the YouTube video of this podcast. So people go to join cycling, go to the training plans, and select the training plan that you think I should do. And then I will do that plan and keep you updated on it throughout doing it. Now, I personally would like to do a sort of stamina builder FTP one to do some long climbing for summer. So just a hint. But yeah, that's what's your vote, Benji?
I vote for VO2 max efforts.
I just did that for Flanders. I just did loads of VO2 work for all the punchy climbs. I would like to build my base and do some long efforts. Also in Andorra, all the climbs take 45 minutes. So if people could please. But anyway, it'll be a bit of fun, and it'll keep me on track as well to having everyone knowing what I'm doing. So go to Join Cycling, have a look through the training plans, and comment on the YouTube video of this podcast which plan I should do. I'll set obviously my level. You can't say do the pro version as well. That's ridiculous. We have to have some limits with this. But if you want to try Join Cycling yourself, you can also get a 30-day free trial using our link down below as well. 6 months discounted after that trial's elapsed. So no strings attached. Try it out. I've really enjoyed it so far. I've done the recovery plan, my classics plan, and now I'm keen to get my summer plan underway. Spring really is here. But back to E3, there's nothing really happening in between Laup and Tyenburg, Benji, except fighting for positioning. Yep. While Skons all of a sudden driving it and then stops for some reason. Like Quickstep were the ones, they even had it in a line once.
Exactly. And the interesting thing that I saw was you've got these early climbs like Laup, for example, Kanariberg after that. There's no one really doing stuff on that because they know Tyenberg is going to be the one that really explodes it. And then you've got the Knochteberg, which comes before the Kortekeer. And it's really after the Knochteberg, after you cross the top, you pass the Holtand, which is an important place in the Flemish Ardennes, one that we actually didn't visit last week, which is shocking. But there's one of these bends where everybody starts moving to the front to get in position for the Kortekeer, starts sprinting to the front to do so. But I feel like Moscon was already kind of pushing it before we hit that point, which I expected them to start pushing at Holtand towards. But before that, you're right. There was already putting it on a line with Moscon and so forth. And that caused a bit of a split in the group at a certain point. And I swear Wout was not well positioned after the Knochteberg. But then,
no.
Whoop, teleported to the front. Was it Roglic style? Was it Roglic that teleported at Slovenian champs back in the day?
Well, Quickstep just stopped.
Yeah.
They just stop. And then, Van Aert comes back with Benoit. Jorgensen, I swear, was on camera from 100Ks to the finish. Yeah. Like, he was the only Visma rider near the front. Van Baarle in this phase was at the front initially. He's had struggle with positioning. In this race last year, he crashed on the Stationsberg turn over the train line. And then suddenly on the Kortekeer, which is after when Van Aert's come back. Van Aert's now in good position. Him and MVDP are actually eating a bit of wind themselves. They've decided, I think Trek were blocking it up on the Kortekeer. Not DSM style, but the pace wasn't
normal.
On Trek. Yeah, it was more like going slow to maintain your position without doing anything ridiculous.
But you were about to mention that Van Baarle had a puncture on the Kortekeer as well there. He got a mechanical there. And then we saw him kind of being in trouble there as a tempo afterwards started kicking up. So he's at the moment behind, which influences the race in my head, because if Hagenes is out already from the start of the race, if Van Baarle has mechanical before they run into the Tyenberg,
Laporte was sick and couldn't start,
then it would shock me if Visma goes to the front on the Tyenberg and tries to explode it like they did 2 years ago, for example. So I wasn't expecting that super explosion from Visma anymore. But if you're on the Kortikir, you already notice who's going to be there on the Taienberg, right? Because between the Kortikir and the Taienberg, it's very difficult to move. It's simple. From Holtomt turning towards the Kortikir, it's a battle for position. And once you're on the Kortikir, you're in that position and it's very hard to move up afterwards. And there we notice the following. We see Van der Poel in a very good position. We see Wout in a very good position, like Jorgensen, like you mentioned. And in addition to that, Lil Trek was there with multiple riders. 4 to 5 riders, if I had to guess, in the first few riders. And
Kirsch.
Kung was not too far. Kirsch was very good today
Kirsch
as well.
Kirsch did
in that.
The Seneschal lead out into Taienberg. Kirsch,
exactly.
I mean, they were unbelievable.
One rider I didn't see at the front, Arnaud Daly, was in Narnia at this point. So I didn't expect him to come forward anymore from that point. And that's when Lil Trek took control, right? Like you said, Kirsch doing the Seneschal lead out, as you say, the Nathan van Hooijdonk lead out of 2 years ago. So straight up the run in towards Taienberg. And it just gets flown on one line. I'm pretty sure it was Crosdelwind in that section today, which helps with putting it on a line. And we hit the Taienberg. And once you're out of position there, once you're P30,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
35? You're probably fucked. That's the scenario. And that's where one rider, one of the vital riders of today, starts his game plan. How does Alpecin go into this race tactically? I expected them to be really aggressive with Van der Poel from the second the Taienberg hit, like they did last year. Because remember last year, the bond attacked on the Kortikir. And had enough of a gap to survive the Taienberg with Van der Poel attacking from the foot of the Taienberg to try and reduce the numerical advantage of Visma, right?
Yeah, and even Sturven initiated it and Van der Poel just goes over the top and he's got everyone on a gap immediately. And Alpecin's game plan is simple. You use 5 of the domestiques to keep Van der Poel fresh before Taienberg because they're going to drop anyway. You never see them again. So they use 5 of the domestiques, fully protecting him, doing lead outs, keeping him at the front of all the climbs before. And then Søren Krah rides his own race to try and help after the Taienberg. But first, Van der Poel, his idea is reduce it. Get rid of all the Visma guys. Get rid of the Trek guys. He goes and he gets rid of everybody. Van Aert doesn't respond or maybe chooses or can't. We don't know at that point. And he's with Pedersen and Sturven. They're both looking very good. And then Van der Poel's clear on the Taienberg, 80k's to go. And I'm thinking, What does he do? And in the end, he just kind of keeps the pressure on the flat without... He clearly didn't go full gas.
Yeah.
At least not... Maybe for 5 minutes he did, hoping someone maybe like Pedersen would bridge to him. Then he definitely slows down at one point.
Is it not just... You're saying maybe it's an attempt to have someone bridge, but is it also not an attempt to, for example, keep the effort going to make it harder for any other riders that have been dropped? Like if, for example, Trotnik has been dropped to quickly return?
I think no, because in that theory, because Van Aert's in the wheels at this point, not pulling so much, and Benoit actually pulls it back. So I think, and Pedersen does actually bridge across to him, but by the time Pedersen bridges across to him, Van der Poel's already decided to have a gel and a bid on because he's sitting up. And this Van Baal is gone. He's never coming back. Tratnik's in group 3. Benoit is there with Jorgensen and Van Aert. Trek have got at least 3, maybe 4 with Kirsch. So there are numbers now. And it all comes back together. Pedersen's actually spent a completely unnecessary bullet trying to bridge across to Van der Poel. He probably should have tried to conserve there. Yeah. And now we have all the hills. Well, actually, there's a flat a bit, and then there's like 4 climbs from the Berchtesgadener stand to the Stationsberg, like back to back to back to back before the flat, before the Kapellenberg. And Trek start doing exactly the right thing. Trek start jumping immediately with Kirsch, with Sturver, even with Pedersen with 70Ks to go. He goes solo. Yep. And Visma, they don't have Van Baarle. They don't have Tratnik. They don't have Laporte. And Benoit's not good enough to go with those guys anyway. And so Jorgensen is like reacting now. And so Trek are doing the Visma tactics in this phase. It's all, and it's going jump, close, Pollitt jumps, Wellens jumps, comes back, Kung jumping, comes back, and these Ks are ticking by. And you know who's not having to jump too much to close anything? Van der Poel. And you know who's being represented in all those moves while Van der Poel recovers? Søren Kristian Andersen.
Yep.
Was excellent in this phase. So Van der Poel played it perfectly during this jumping phase.
Yeah, he played it perfectly, not reacting to those moments in between the climbs where those riders go. But then every now and then he does put in that little acceleration. For example, I think it was on the Bonnierberg, where he put an acceleration maybe to bridge towards someone or to attack past someone. And then you see kind of the response of like Visma. And there was a moment where Visma responded with Jorgensen on Van der Poel. Yeah. Was that surprising to you?
No, Jorgensen very strong. I thought probably top three or four strongest in the race at least. Maybe even stronger than that. But there's not enough Visma riders to play the numbers. Or maybe they've just got to go with Sturver and with Lazcano. And that doesn't happen. And Benoit, I think, was jumping a little bit. But do you really want Benoit going with Sturver and then saying we're happy with that situation? And Søren Kristian was so good in this phase. But yeah, it's like Van der Poel basically let that all play out. And then he'd pick a moment on these hills to make a big acceleration to test Visma. And also, every time he knows they're out of position, bang, testing. So he was playing it really, really well. Trek, I think, in this phase, we're also doing the right thing. It's just the right group didn't go, because if Movistar are in it with Wellens and Kirsch, but then Kung isn't happy.
But I think we need to move forward to the Stationstraat, because I want to pick into that point of Little Trek a bit later. Stationstraat, same place where Van der Poel attacked last year. He does again right here. Goes on the outside. Wout is the only rider I can follow, just like last year.
This is Erasure.
Oh my God. Was there someone else? LeBerry was caught from the breakaway.
Lazcano was launched it.
Was that not later?
It was on the two stations things.
I don't fucking know.
On the cobble one, Lazcano launched it. And he... And then Van der Poel went over the top of him, and then he followed Van der Poel and Van Aert for a little bit. But Lazcano definitely accelerates here. And then, Van der Poel goes over the top, and Van Aert's in the wheel. And I was thinking, and then I think a group of five was formed. There was a group of five at one point with Van Aert, Jorgensen, I don't know if it was before, and Van Aert and Jorgensen rolled through and were like closing each other through. I thought it was very strange through the corners. But then finally, go on.
It comes back together after the Stationstraat.
Yeah.
And that's where I think Van der Poel has one moment where he is kind of on the back foot. Because with about 55 kilometers to go, meanwhile, Hirschi and Benoit have crashed out of front of the race, basically. They were in group three as that stuff on the Stationstraat was happening. And I'm pretty sure Hirschi and Benoit both abandoned the race. And then with 55K to go, Visma plays Jorgensen in the attack. And what's noticeable there is we get a group that is forming. Jorgensen, Lazcano, once again, let's not erase that man. He was
very bridged the breakaway.
They're all up there with breakaway riders, with Oliveira, with Steimler, with De Pestel, with Cavagna as domestique for Lazcano now, Merkel, Abrahamsen, and Vermote. So that's the breakaway we've got there. But Van der Poel and Wout are in the second group, and we see continuous attacks there because Kung and Pollitt are like, oh, these two are looking at each other. Let me be the third dog that gets the bone. And they both attack as well from that group, and they catch up with the breakaway. And that is a moment where Visma was actively hindering Van der Poel with their two-rider numerical advantage.
it was a good situation. Lazcano super strong. You get across that breakaway, and you've got two satellite riders, Oliveira pulling Pollitt. Cavagna in theory for Lazcano. Two problems for that theory, both for Lazcano and Jorgensen. Firstly, Cavagna doesn't pull full gas for Lazcano. I don't know what the fuck he was doing or thinking was going to happen. He literally Oliveira did a really good job. UAE, their classics team, is overperforming. They are performing really, really well. But Cavagna was like saving to attack on the Kapellberg. Bizarre. I thought he'd pull full gas to launch Lazcano. Second problem, Trek have missed it. And they're the most...
Exactly.
They got the most numbers in this whole race. And so this is perfect for Vanderpool. Basically, Tyenberg attack, attacks, reacting. Then 30Ks elapse in this phase where he's not having to do too much or react on anything. And now we're like close enough to the Paterberg that when Jorgensen goes, he can be like, he just waits. Some other team will come back. Some other domestiques will come back. And they will keep this gap close enough that on the Paterberg or the Quarmen, I can solve this with an attack instead of actually having to chase. And not only that, he has Søren Kristensen in the group, Benji. And Trek didn't even make them chase.
And you said it, Jorgensen does attack, doesn't make that move on the Kapellberg from that first group. And he looked strong initially. But then the man you already mentioned already on the Stationsberg, he does it here again on the Kapellberg, counters Jorgensen, and he straight up drops that group. Lazcano was solo for quite a bit there, and this is about 3 kilometers before the Paterberg, if I recall correctly. And then you get the scenario that you'd expect, because the UAE riders that were with Jorgensen, Lazcano, they get called by the group behind. So now you have got UAE riders and Trek riders positioning and leading out towards the Paterberg. So Van der Poel doesn't have to do much outside of trying to position himself in a good position to get as close as possible to Lazcano by the foot of the Paterberg with the help of UAE and Trek, because Van der Poel doesn't need to do anything. And Jorgensen and Van Aert, same story. They're all three sitting there trying to position themselves for the Paterberg. And in the meanwhile, Narváez was pretty good as well. Got to mention him. He was really strong during this race. And if I recall, he was just behind Lazcano going into the Paterberg, right?
I think so, yeah. And that's the strange thing is that Lazcano... Yeah, like him and Cavagna attacked Jorgensen, but now with Trek doing the lead out, and Trek, they've done this a lot. Like Schoens is super strong. They kind of bet all on Pedersen following on the Paterberg instead of trying to bridge across with Sturve or what's his name? Schoens or Kirsch. Anyway, Paterberg, get there. The group behind with Van Aert, Kung, Van der Poel. Vanderpool just before the left turn into Paterberg, 300 meters, 11% cobbled, jumps. He jumps in the descent running, goes in front of Kung and catches Van Aert by surprise. It's a right turn. They come the other way. They take the right turn into the Paterberg, and Kung's off the wheel of Vanderpool, and then Van Aert's behind Kung, or he's like really off the wheel. He got surprised. And then Vanderpool hits the gutter. Van Aert's off, coming through the corner. You could already see he was coming quicker into the corner. You could see something, like he was already panicking coming into the corner. And then he's in the gutter. Kung comes across him. Not that far behind Van der Poel. And then Van Aert, before even getting his balance, because the gutter, they're going still right on the Paterberg, I think, a little bit. They're like not balanced yet. He tries to come off the gutter onto the cobbles to immediately get around Kung, who slid in front of him. I don't think Kung didn't chop him.
No.
He just moved in front. And he slides out. He basically was at too acute an angle and off balance when he tried to move onto the cobble, slides out and crashes. It even blocks Jorgensen behind. Vanderpool was attacking anyway. That was his whole plan. And he's going clear on the Paterberg with probably the second favorite for the race on the ground. And yeah, I thought that the race was over at that point, Benji.
Yeah, I thought the race was over 100%. Then we're now at 42, 43 kilometers to go once we hit that top of the Paterberg. And the gap from Van der Poel to Narváez, who hit the top of the Paterberg in second position, was already 10-15 seconds. And let's say 10 seconds for the intenseness of the podcast. And the rest of the group behind, well, you've got, they're all in pieces, right? It's not like one group chasing. So that reduces the cooperation to try and chase down someone like Van der Poel in the front end. Then you've got Wout van Aert, who after he got up, is picking in with the leftovers of basically the group that they ended up well, the group that was behind, the group they were in when they hit the Paterberg, because that was a group with the likes of Brent van Moer, for example, who actually rode a pretty good race for him. And this means that Van Aert is now trying to get that group back to the group ahead, which is not the front group yet, because in front of that group you've got Narvaez, and in front of that you've got Van der Poel. So the gap was there. Let's say it was 12. How much do you guess what Van Aert was behind at the top of the Paterberg? Yeah,
at least 25-30 seconds
is my guess. And Wout van Aert does get closer group by group, and eventually with Jorgensen's help, because I felt like when Van Aert caught the Jorgensen group, so group three, there was a bit of a look between the two, and then they start collaborating. Were you surprised that Trek didn't really pull in full there?
A little bit, because it doesn't really, you're both so confident that you'll do a full lead out before the Paterberg for MVDP to drop everybody.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe he drops Wout, maybe he doesn't. Jury's out on that one. He's dropping everyone on Trek. And then when he's clear on the flat, you don't chase. I thought it was very strange. But then the flip side of that is they were trying to anticipate before Visma. After the Tyrannberg, they were trying to do the right thing from 75Ks to go to 60Ks to go. And it never quite works. So I don't know. UAE also, they were not pulling. But also, why you've just been cooked on the Quarmont, or the Paterberg rather. And yeah, Jorgensen does lead out for Van Aert on the Quarmont. Van Aert goes solo. I think it's the only thing to do. If you really want to win the race, you have to do it, because you're not going to, with Wellens and the others not pulling with you, you're not going to come close enough. So it's better to go solo. And he goes over the top, and it's looking good initially for Van Aert, Benji, in terms of, it was 35 seconds, massive gap, but it all starts to come down. And then we actually have a flatter section here between the Quarmont, on top of the Quarmont rather, and then the descent. Yeah. It really comes down. It goes from 35, 27, 13, and I'm hand timing it. It's also, these are legit gaps. And then on the longest, almost the longest climb of the day, the Kamermelkebergstraat, that's a hard one. Van der Poel doesn't like surge, but he seems to, like Van Aert cracks. He holds the gap stable, loses maybe 2 seconds on that climb, and then after that climb on the flat, just completely explodes, and it's all one-way traffic from there. So Van der Poel was doing it easy. Like, visibly looked good, and it was exciting for a bit when it got down to 12 seconds. You think, ooh, yep, this could be really close, but in the end, Van der Poel just rides away, and this gap gets completely out of control, like up to nearly 2 minutes at one point. And so we focus on the group behind, which is Wellens. Binnie having a really, really nice race. Great to see him at the pointy end of classics, big classics like this once again. Narvaez also excellent. And Sturve. Sturve shutting up the critics, Benji, yeah, being by far the strongest of the Trek riders in the final of this race. And they're in that group. Jorgensen's there. He's not pulling for the most part. And eventually they close down Van Aert. He stalls so badly, they close down Van Aert. Sturven attacks across to him. They relay. Van Aert, curiously, even though he was cooked, relayed with Sturve and then didn't contest the sprint. And then Van der Poel wins by, like, I don't know, I haven't looked, what, 2 minutes? What did he win by? No, only 1:30 washed.
Wow, a 1:30, but 1:30. He also wasn't pushing anymore.
Incredible. It's so much better than everybody else. He wins by 1:30. Sturven wins second, uncontested, ahead of Van Aert in third. Then Wellens in fourth, continuing his good classic season. Jorgensen tried to attack in the finish, but he got reeled back by Wellens. Fifth, Narvaez sixth on 1:52. And, ooh, Binnie really cracked. Pollitt, 7th, Schoen's 8th, Albanese 9th, Kirsch 10th. They actually dropped Pedersen. So Pedersen was the 4th strongest of the Trek riders in the end. And Binnie finishes on 3:07. So he really, like Van Aert, hit a wall in the final of this race. Brent van Moer, as Benji said, the best of Lotto. Quite a nice result for him in 13th. Lazcano also definitely overextended, attacking before the Paterberg. So Both an interesting race, Benji, but also a very straightforward outcome in that Vanderpool was much better than everybody else and did the business.
Yep, exactly. Vanderpool was better than the rest. You could say that maybe if Wout van Aert doesn't crash, it's a close race. But to me, Vanderpool was pretty fucking strong on all the climbs before that happened in the first place. And Wout van Aert showed nothing before that where I could have said, okay, they're on the same level necessarily. So for me, Vanderpool was the strongest rider in the race. I wouldn't say that van Aert is too far away from it. I just hope that his crash didn't give him anything too much. He said in an interview after the race, I hope that it's nothing too bad. Say that he's hurt and disappointed after a, in between brackets, a dumb crash.
But it wasn't dumb. Vanderpool made him crash. He did. He made him panic through his move.
But it's
he jumps at the right time. He sees he's just before the Paderberg not watching. The most important 300 meters of this race. Van der Poel jumps him. Van Aert boxed in. And he's all on the back foot from there. And
is that also not a mistake from Van Aert to not be in that position before the Paderberg?
Sort of. But also, like, you can't stay on someone's... Like, you could say it's very simplistic to say, okay, for 210 kilometers, you have to stay on this person's wheel.
No, but... The foot of the Paderberg is a small segment.
I also accept that. But Vanderpool, he doesn't make mistakes.
Yep.
But he's both the best when Poggi's not here, and he doesn't make mistakes. He is in position on the important moments. He is looking where his opponents are. And the second he sees they're not on his wheel, he jumps and he's proactive. And then he lets the shit happen behind him. Because people get boxed in on these narrow entries to climbs, and then if you try to move too quickly, you can crash, so.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Yeah, Vanderpool, both physically and tactically outstanding today. And if the Tour of Flanders, Benji, it's a big wake-up call for everybody. For Visma, after a good opening weekend, they won this race 2 years in a row, E3, but it's a big wake-up call to everybody. Trek, Bahrain, who else is here? Yeah, Ineos, that Vanderpool is the man to beat. Because I would say the level, like the level difference in Vanderpool and everyone else is so big.
But I think the level also is displayed as big as it is today because of the situation in the race. As in, if Mbala doesn't have 17 mechanicals and crash at the start of the race, if Hagenes doesn't crash early, if Benoit doesn't crash, you've got more riders from Visma, which then is able to play more of a role when it comes to their forever attempt to use their numerical advantage.
Yeah, but this happened in Flanders last year.
Yeah, it's, well,
numerical advantage looks fantastic, and then a group goes with 100Ks to go, and there's nothing Van Hooydonk in it.
I agree, but I feel like the scenario of the race helped in that way.
Oh, for sure. Like, if you have Laporte and Van Baarle and Jorgensen and Van Aert in a group of 10... after the Tyrenberg, then you go with Sturva and you can make something happen.
That's a scenario one day, because if Laporte does it this race, if Van Baarle doesn't have a mechanical, he's probably still not in a good position because Van Baarle does have positioning issues. But does Trotnik has to have positioning issues? Because I swear in important moments, he's not been there a few times this year.
Yeah, he's just small. Like he's a small, people think he's very small guy. Like he's my height. So it's tougher for him compared to Laporte and Van Aert to position in the run-ins to these climbs. Because the run-ins are all 65 kilometers an hour on the flat or the ascents. I think Trek...
But Van der Poel is stronger.
Yeah. Van der Poel is... Because I think he goes away on the climb. Like maybe... Or he would have just kept attacking and eventually would have probably won.
Exactly.
I would say Trek seemed to have taken a big step up in level. In these classics, I don't remember last year them having such a team impact on the race.
Yeah, no.
Like this, with Kiersch, Schoens, Sturva, and Pedersen, I still think the way they're using Schoens purely as a domestique today until it was too late is is not correct, given what we saw on mm-hmm. opening weekend. Because Pedersen also, his level, he seems like he peaked for the 2.1 French races to beat Axel Zangler and then skipped opening weekend during that peak. And now he's come back and he's not in as good a shape. That's what it seems like to me. Because he finished, and I appreciate he was active early, but he finished 11th, fourth of the Trek riders.
I feel like I expected more from the position that Pedersen was in at MSR as well. So I feel like it's been
a
bit under what I expected, especially after him literally saying he was in the best form of his life the morning of MSR. So it's logical that I do expect him more than an 11th place in this race. Then, and at certain points, like, he shouldn't be the full best Trek rider in this race. He should be in the group together with Screens and Alex Kirsch and so forth. And that just didn't happen. And there's a few riders where I'm impressed by. Like, Wellens was impressive, as expected, I would say. Stuyven definitely performed over what I expected, which complete credits for that, because he didn't look great at the start of the year, but he's severely better the last weeks. And then Jorgensen performed on level, really fucking strong. Narváez was really strong, maybe a little better than I expected. Paulet doing really well at the moment, so I'm curious what that will do in a race like Roubaix that on paper fits him better. Albanese rode a really fucking good race, top 10 in this race. That's really good. And then you look at P10 until P20, and the results will not show how good this race was for Binyam, but it also is worrying that he then completely cracks and loses a full-on minute, and even more than a minute, from the moment he drops from the Wellens group to the finish line.
That was like 7Ks to go, right?
Because next week, RVV is a longer and harder race.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was with that group, I thought, in the last 10Ks. And it was on the flat. So to lose a minute, you've got to be completely stalled. And that's also what happened, the same thing to Van Aert. Like, he completely stalled in the last 15Ks. And Stuyven was stronger in the finish.
Can I say I am somewhat impressed by the fact that Oliver Naassen finished 26th on 4 minutes 15, and you would say, oh, that's not a good result, that's an okay result, whatever. But I swear this dude had a mechanical on the Tyenberg.
On the Tyenberg, or just before, in the phase where it all kicked off, same as Van Baarle, and if you have it there, your race is finished.
How is he still 26th?
Because he's in good shape. Didn't I pick him for like top 5 in MSR or something?
Did he get top 5 in MSR?
No. Where'd Moscon come, buddy?
He DNF today.
Did he? Well, I don't know why they used him to do a full lead out there.
Yeah,
Alaphilippe was good, but maybe a bit misguided in his efforts, trying to make stuff happen. He kind of did what he's been doing. He did what he did in the Tour last year, getting a breakaway and then just completely ruin himself and then completely drop. So he looks in better shape, but he didn't ride conservatively enough. The best of the early break, Jonas Abrahamsson, finishes 12th. That's a very nice result as well. He's a strong rider.
When it comes to the rest, is there anyone What did we learn from this? Van der Poel is still fucking good. That's number one. When it comes to Flanders, that Van der Poel is still the favorite. That's number one. That little Trek and Visma Lisa bikes. What do you call that? Group strength, numerical advantage.
They
got to
work together, not against each other.
It's very difficult to apply.
Yeah.
Like, there's more space in that race to anticipate before Van der Poel launched it, but there's also more space for Van der Poel to keep attacking for your numerical advantage to become fucking useless. So it counters each other, you know, in the route of Ronde van Vlaanderen, and that's a part of it that's so beautiful that because it's so long and so hard, it's likely that the strongest rider in the race does come to the top towards the end, but it's still a long and hard race, which allows it, due to its length, to have early groups like Pedersen last year with Jorgensen that actually make it very far in the final. Like, Pedersen's podium this race doing so. So it is possible those anticipation moves in this race. And outside of those riders, I don't know. I'm now curious to see what Naassen will do in the coming races, because that really impressed me, the fact that he's still 26th. Dilly had a horrible race. Like, if you position yourself in Narnia before the Tyenberg, then you're going to finish in Narnia, and that's exactly what he has. So, I don't know, it's not a good race for him, and who else can I spot here? Quickstep, sorry, but...
Yeah, but...
Alaphilippe and Asgreen were there for a bit, but...
No.
They got beaten by De Pestel and Van Moor.
The two deepest teams seem to be Visma and Trek, but there's one best rider, Vanderpool. And one of the big takeaways as well today was who had a knee injury and wasn't as good as normal in Sanremo. Søren Kreij was back today.
Yes.
And that's really big for Flanders. Last year, Søren Kreij was attacking in Flanders as well in the middle phase. So
yes,
that's really, really big for Alpecin and Vanderpool that he's got such a strong ally who can manage when those anticipations are happening. Because what he does is he slips in them, doesn't help, neutralizes them, it comes back, and every time 3Ks, yep. 3Ks get ticked off, and then another 3Ks, and then another 3Ks, and all of a sudden, you're at the base of the Paterberg, Jorgensen and Lascano have 10 seconds, bang. That's all Vanderpool needs. So, it's back to the drawing board, I think, for everybody for Flanders next week, Benji. Although we've got Gent Wevelgem on Sunday, I guess we should preview that. I'll just mention the results of Volta Catalunya. Laurence won what looks like a small group sprint ahead of Vandenberg and Coquard and Aulard. There was a breakaway earlier in the day, but Gent Wevelgem, Benji, it looks like Laporte is out. No Wout van Aert either, so there's going to be one very, very short favourite, Mathieu van der Poel, with no Poggi and Visma missing four best riders, no Van Baarle, no Laporte, no van Aert, no Jorgensen, no Poggi. Does van der Poel just go on the last camel and it's see you later?
Possibly, but I would also consider potential echelons as well in the Mouren.
You got some intel about wind.
I'm trying to look at wind because wind exists in Flanders. And
not in Brugge de Panne this week.
Not in Brugge de Panne, that's for sure. But
yeah,
there is some wind projected, so echelons could do something. But I'm not overly impressed by the wind situation yet, where I'll say, oh, echelons. So for me, it's on the like, meh, I don't know yet, we'll see kind of vibe.
Yeah, Echelon certainly can add a different dynamic to the race. But if you're Trekker or Quickstep, you got to send those.
Would you attack if you're vulnerable, knowing Philipsen exists and is fucking good too?
Ooh, yes, yeah. Because then you attack. Both. Everyone else has to chase. Philipsen's in the group. Your lead out doesn't have to work.
Yeah, but if you attack too hard, Philipsen might drop from the group. That's the problem.
Yeah, but not so far, you know? Although he was kind of shitting Kerner with the repeated. Yeah. But there's how many climbs they actually
do? This ain't Kerner anymore.
Yeah, this is easier, right?
You've got Kemmelberg. You've got an in-between segment. So the Belvedere, Kemmelberg first, in-between segment. Then again, Belvedere segment. Then Ossouer at the last Kemmelberg.
Ossouer's the last one. That's 40, I can't count, 35Ks from the finish. Yeah, I would attack if I'm Vanderpool, and then Philipsen can be in the group behind, and Alpecin's lead out doesn't have to work, and Trek have to do everything.
Ooh, I'd look at it potentially in a different way, as in, you can also just play Vanderpool as your neutralizer of any attacks, eh?
He won by 2 minutes today.
Yeah, but
on
Philipsen
the
won MSR.
On the
Literally
flat.
Both can win the race.
Okay.
Do it differently. You follow an attack with Vanderpool and you try and counter them. You see if you can drop them. If you can't, it's Philipsen.
It's different to MSR where it's like 3Ks to 4Ks to go. He switches to chasing when Philipsen is clearly the strongest in the group.
Philipsen should be strongest here too in the sprint.
No, you Merlier don't ride passive if Merlier is in the group or other sprinters are in the group. If it's a bigger group or Beanie or... You never know. Philipsen's actual flat sprint hasn't looked as dominant this year.
Yeah, but Binny ain't beating Philipsen in a flat sprint. Even shit Philipsen won't
Are
get
sure?
beaten by Binny in a flat. Yes.
He did in Tirreno, no? Bauhaus beat him.
What? He crashed.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Bauhaus won the stage he crashed.
I'm not putting handcuffs on Vanderpool just so Philipsen can probably, I agree, probably win a sprint of 450 guys.
Yeah, fair.
I think you play
both and you see what situation evolves.
Yeah. Okay, that's our preview of Gent Wevelgem, the men's race. We also have the women's race as well. That's looking... who's starting that? Kopecky, Wiebes, Reusser, not a bad squad for SD Works. Digert also is allegedly racing. She's Brugger de Panna on Wednesday. She came sixth in the bunch sprint, but this is the harder race. I'm picking Digert for this. So I think Digert wins on the weekend. I think she rides away from everybody on Kemmelberg. So can Schramm get their big win?
No.
I'm not moved by Kopecky. I think Digert is
Wiebes wins.
Oh, you think she... Okay. Fair enough. Okay, is there anything else? Any other news?
Oh, good question. Do we do a weekly show this week?
I won't commit to it yet. I'll make up my mind later. we've got a Gent Wevelgem recap as well. Yeah, maybe we will, because there's Dwiles doing next Wednesday. On Monday, I should move my ass Monday. I don't have much on. Okay, that's all from us. Hope you enjoyed the E3 Saxo Classic recap. Vanderpool on top. He's ticking off all those classics off his list. Yep. And make sure you comment on this YouTube video if you're watching there what joint cycling training plan I should do. I wait with bated breath until Sunday's recap of Gent Wevelgem. Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.